I'm Risha Gidwani. I'm a health economist here at HERC in Menlo Park, and I'm very pleased today to introduce my colleague, Christine Palchi, another health economist at HERC. Christine has been with HERC since October of 2012. She's a health economist who's interested in the efficiency and effectiveness of healthcare systems. Her research focuses on the delivery and the quality of healthcare, on physician and hospital behavior, patient health behavior, health and economic well-being, as well as the determinants of healthcare utilization and spending. She received her PhD in economics from Columbia University, and today I'm very pleased to introduce her to discuss instrumental variables regression, which is a very powerful technique for causal inference in observational data. Christine, thanks very much for joining us and speaking today.
Thank you, Risha. As Risha mentioned, in today's lecture, we'll be discussing instrumental variables regression. To start, it's helpful to think about instrumental variables regression within the larger context of estimating causal effects. And in health services research, our research question often looks something like this. What is the effect of blank, some treatment, on blank, some outcome? Ideally, we'd estimate this effect using a randomized controlled trial. But we know that randomized controlled trials are oftentimes not practical, not feasible, not ethical. So they are often not possible. An alternative is to perform multiple regression analysis using observational data. Now here, in order for us to estimate an unbiased treatment effect, it must be the case that treatment is exogenous. We discussed this in greater detail in the research design lecture a few weeks ago, and we'll briefly discuss this concept in today's lecture. But what this means is that whether or not someone receives treatment must be uncorrelated with all other factors that might affect the outcome variable we're interested in. Now, if treatment is not exogenous, then our estimated treatment effects will be biased. And we'll need another method to estimate these treatment effects. One possibility is instrumental variables regression, which we'll spend the rest of our time today discussing. To start off, it would be very helpful to get a sense of the group's familiarity with instrumental variables regression. And I'm going to ask Heidi here to help put up a poll. Now, if you could choose the first option, if you're new to instrumental variables regression, the second, if you're somewhat familiar with instrumental variables regression, and the third, if you have an advanced knowledge of instrumental variables regression.
And we have those responses coming in. We'll give everyone just a few more moments before I close the poll question out and go through the answers. Okay, looks like we're slowing down here. So what we are seeing is 51% of the audience saying that they are new to IV regression, 41% are somewhat familiar, and 8% have advanced knowledge. Thank you, everyone, for participating.
Okay. Thank you, Heidi. So it sounds like most of the group is somewhat new or new. About half of the group is new to instrumental variables. And probably another two-thirds to half is somewhat familiar. And I think this lines up quite well with the objectives of today's lecture. So the purpose of today's lecture is to provide an introduction to instrumental variables regression. So here we will not be focusing on technical details or procedures, but rather key concepts and the intuition behind instrumental variables regression. And to do that, we'll begin with the basic linear regression model and talk about when we would need to consider an alternative method like instrumental variables regression. And then we'll discuss necessary conditions for a valid instrument and look at why and how instrumental variables regression works. And to see instrumental variables regression in action, we'll walk through a well-known paper by McClellan, McNeil, and Newhouse that uses distance to evaluate the effect of intensive heart attack treatments on mortality. And if we have time, we'll briefly discuss a few other examples. And finally, we will end with discussing some limitations of instrumental variables regression. So again, the focus of this lecture will be on key concepts and the intuition behind instrumental variables regression. For those who are already familiar or very familiar with instrumental variables regression, hopefully this discussion will provide a nice review or new ways of thinking about instrumental variables. So before we jump into our discussion of instrumental variables regression, we'll briefly review the linear regression model to see where and how instrumental variables regression fits in. So our basic linear regression model usually looks something like this. We have Y as our outcome variable of interest, and X, our explanatory variable of interest. And here we'd like to understand the effect that X has on Y. We discussed in the research design lecture that we can think of the regression model as a sort of conceptual model that specifies how Y is determined. If that's the case, then E, the error term, we can think of that as containing all other factors besides X that determine the value of Y. And the coefficient we're generally most interested in is beta 1, which corresponds to the change in Y associated with the change in X. Now, in order for our OLS, our ordinary least squares estimate from this regression of beta 1, beta 1 hat, to be an unbiased estimate of the causal effect of X on Y, X must be exogenous. What does it mean for X to be exogenous? Formally, it means that the conditional mean of E, or error term, given X, is 0. This means that for a given value of X, or actually any value of X, the mean or average value of E, the error, is 0. This means that once we know the value of X, we know nothing more about the value of E, our error term, and therefore we know nothing more, or we can say nothing more, about the value of Y. So E does not help us better predict Y. When that is the case, we say that X is exogenous. And this implies that X and E, our error term, cannot be correlated. In the research design lecture, we saw how when we saw that X and E are correlated when there is omitted variable bias, sample selection, and simultaneous causality. And if X and E are correlated, then we say that X is endogenous. And if X is endogenous, then our estimate, beta 1 hat, is biased, and it will not estimate the causal effect of X on Y. And here, we would need to consider other methods to estimate the causal treatment effect. And this is where instrumental variables regression comes in. So the idea behind instrumental variables regression is actually very simple. And it starts off with the insight that variation in X, this is the explanatory variable we're interested in, that variation in X has two components. The first component is correlated with E, and this is the problematic part that causes endogeneity, because when X and E are correlated, beta 1 hat will be biased. Now, the other component of X is uncorrelated with E. This component poses no problems, and we will refer to this component as exogenous variation in X. In instrumental variables regression, the aim is to use only exogenous variation in X that is uncorrelated with E to estimate beta 1, or causal effect of X on Y. How do we isolate the exogenous variation in X? This is where the instrumental variables come in. Instrumental variables, or instruments, can be used to isolate the exogenous variation in X that is uncorrelated with E, the error term. And what makes something an instrument? It must be the case that two things are true. So two conditions must be satisfied for a valid instrument. The first is instrument relevance, and the second is instrument exogeneity. And we'll talk about each of these conditions. But before we do that, let's take another look at our regression model so we have a framework in mind. So we have our regression model here, dependent variable y, which we regress on our explanatory variable x. And we'd like to use this regression model to estimate the effect of x on y. But we have a problem, and that is x is endogenous, which leads our estimate of beta 1 half to be biased. And this is true when x and E, the error term, are correlated. Remember that E contains all other factors besides X that determine the value of Y. But here we have a potential instrument Z. And we'll evaluate this potential instrument Z within the context of this model. The first condition that must be satisfied for an instrument to be valid is instrument relevance. It must be the case that our instrument Z is correlated with X. This is the variable, the explanatory variable we're interested in. This means that variation in Z explains variation in X. Or in other words, Z affects X, or our instrument affects the variable of interest. If this is true, then we say that our instrument Z is relevant. The second condition that must be satisfied for our instrument to be valid is instrument exogeneity. Here it must be the case that our instrument Z is uncorrelated with the error term, E. That means that Z, our instrument, is uncorrelated with all other factors besides X that determine Y. This means that our instrument Z does not actually affect Y itself. It only affects Y through affecting X. When this is true, we say that our instrument Z is exogenous. Now, to see how these two conditions, instrument relevance and instrument exogeneity, come together and help us estimate beta 1, the causal effect of X on Y, let's return to our regression model. What we're interested in here is beta 1. This is the effect of X on Y. So the key insight behind instrumental variables regression is that variation in X has two components. One component is uncorrelated with E, our error term. And these are all other factors that might determine our outcome variable. The second component can be correlated or is correlated with E, our error term. Now, a valid instrument affects X. It's relevant, but it is also uncorrelated with the error term. It is exogenous. So what we'll do is we'll use our instrument Z to isolate exogenous variation in X that is uncorrelated with the error term. And in doing this, we disregard the problematic variation that causes endogeneity and our estimates biased. And this is possible because our instrument Z only captures the variation in X that is uncorrelated with E. To provide a little bit more intuition on what an instrument or an instrumental variable might look like, let's consider an example where we like to estimate the effect of some medical treatment on a particular outcome like mortality. We can specify the regression model to look like this. We have our outcome, mortality, as a dependent variable. And on the right-hand side, we have a binary treatment variable that equals 1 if a patient receives treatment and 0 if the patient does not receive treatment. Let's say treatment is assigned through a coin flip. Heads, a patient gets treatment. Tails, a patient does not get treatment. Let's ask, is the coin flip a valid instrument for treatment? So first, does the coin flip affect whether or not a patient receives treatment? Yes, if we're using heads and tails to determine treatment. It is the case that the coin flip affects whether or not a patient receives treatment. So yes, the coin flip is relevant. Second, does the coin flip directly affect the outcome? And here the outcome we are interested in was mortality. Does the coin flip affect mortality? Probably not. If a patient flipped a head, his or her mortality probably would not be affected. However, let's consider the case where our outcome variable is not mortality, but it's headaches. And when we flip the coin, we don't just flip it, but we throw the coin directly at the patient's head. In that case, we would probably say that the coin flip may affect the outcome variable we're interested in. And in that case, the coin flip would not be exogenous. But in this case, where we're interested in mortality, the coin flip is exogenous. We do not believe that the coin flip directly affects mortality. So in the scenario that I just described, the coin flip effectively randomized patients to treatment without actually affecting outcomes. And this gives us a scenario that looks a lot like a randomized controlled trial where we have exogenous variation in treatment. So in a similar way, variation in an instrument mimics a randomization of patients to different likelihoods of receiving treatment. So now that we've discussed what is required of a ballot instrument and what it does, let's see how instrumental variables regression works. But before we do that, we'll formulate the instrumental variables model. We start off with our usual...
Christine, we do have one question about this coin flip, and that is that wouldn't your coin flip be completely collinear with treatment?
Yes, in this case, the coin flip perfectly predicts treatment. That is fine. It does not have to be the case that our instrument perfectly predicts treatment. It just must be the case that our instrument predicts treatment. It's correlated with treatment.
Right. So whether it's a perfect or a correlation less than 1.0, it's still okay to use as an instrument. Great, thank you.
Okay, let's return to our instrumental variables model. So we start off with our regression model. And we have an endogenous explanatory variable of interest. Here, our explanatory variable of interest, X, is correlated with E, our error term. And E contains all other factors that determine Y. However, we also have a valid instrument Z. This instrument is both relevant, so it is correlated with the endogenous regressor. So here it is correlated with a variable we're interested in. And in the previous case, we talked about that variable being treatment. So here the instrument is correlated with treatment. And second, this instrument is exogenous. So the instrument Z is uncorrelated with the error term. It's uncorrelated with all other factors besides X that affect the outcome variable Y. So there are several different ways to estimate the instrumental variables estimator of beta 1. A common method that also nicely demonstrates how instrumental variables regression works is two-stage least squares, which, as its name suggests, is implemented in two stages. In the first stage, we regress X on Z. So here, X is going to be our dependent variable, and Z, our instrument, is going to be our explanatory variable, our right-hand side variable. When we look at this regression equation, we can see how the variation in X can be broken down into two components. Because Z is exogenous and uncorrelated with E, this first component is also uncorrelated with E. The second component, which contains everything else that determines X, can or is correlated with E. And we'd like to estimate this first component of X, which is uncorrelated with E. And in order to do that, we use the estimated, we use the estimated coefficients from the first stage regression of X on Z. So pi naught hat and pi 1 hat. And we use these coefficients and our instrument Z to predict X, which has been cleaned of variation that is correlated with E, or error term. Variation in this predicted X is uncorrelated with E because it's constructed using information from Z, which is also uncorrelated with E. Now, in the second stage, we regress Y on our predicted X, and we do this and estimate the two-stage least squares estimate of theta 1. So here, our regression model looks a lot like our original one, but instead of including X as our regressor, we've included predicted X using information from Z as our regressor. Now, because Z is uncorrelated with the error term in the original model, predicted X, X hat, is also uncorrelated with E. The error term in the original model. And because of that, the two-stage least squares estimate of theta 1 is an unbiased estimate of the causal effect of X on Y. Now, I should note that the standard errors in the second stage two-stage least squares regression needs to be adjusted to account for the fact that the second stage uses the predicted values of X rather than X itself. But many statistical software programs will estimate both stages at the same time and automatically adjust the standard errors for us. So most of the time, this is not an issue, but if anyone is estimating this in two separate steps, this additional step must be taken into account. So to simplify our discussion, I focus on the case where there was only one endogenous regressor and one instrument. But the instrumental variables model can be generalized to include multiple endogenous regressors, multiple exogenous regressors, or control variables, and multiple instrumental variables. The important and necessary thing is that there must be at least as many instruments as there are endogenous variables. So the number of instruments must be greater than or equal to the number of endogenous variables. Another thing to note that is actually very important to note is that instrumental variables regression estimates the local average treatment effect. And the local average treatment effect is the weighted average of individual causal effects. With individuals who are influenced most by the instrument receiving the most weight. So these are patients or people who would not otherwise receive treatment were it not for the instrument. So in that way, the instrumental variables regression estimates the marginal effect of treatment. So this is the effect of treatment on that additional person who receives treatment. And in general, the local average treatment effect, or the marginal treatment effect, differs from the average treatment effect over the entire population. This does not bias our estimates. It just changes the interpretation of our estimates, which is something we need to be very mindful of when drawing conclusions from instrumental variables regression. And we'll talk a little bit more about this when we get to our example, which is up next. So to see instrumental variables regression in action, we'll walk through a well-known paper by McClellan, McNeil, and Newhouse that asks, does more intensive treatment of acute myocardial infarction, heart attack, in the elderly reduce mortality? Specifically, we want to estimate the effect of intensive treatment of heart attack, like cardiac catheterization, angioplasty, and CABG, on mortality. Now, the basic regression model that corresponds to this research question looks something like this. Here we have mortality as our dependent variable, and treatment, a binary treatment variable, as our explanatory variable of interest. And here we'll focus on cardiac catheterization. So the treatment variable will be equal to 1 if a patient receives cardiac catheterization, and 0 if the patient does not receive cardiac catheterization. And effectively, what we're doing here is we're comparing mortality rates between patients who do and do not receive cardiac catheterization. And when we do that, we find that cardiac catheterization or receiving cardiac catheterization is associated with a very large reduction in mortality. We see here these estimates suggest that receiving cardiac catheterization reduces mortality by 30 percentage points. But there's a problem here. And there's a problem with comparing patients who do and do not receive cardiac catheterization. And it's that whether or not a patient receives more intensive treatment is correlated with many unobserved factors that may also affect mortality. And these factors can include the patient's health status or the patient or physician preferences, among others. When we take a closer look at the patients who do and do not receive cardiac catheterization, we actually find some interesting things. So this table presents some characteristics of patients who do not receive cardiac catheterization, and this corresponds to the second to last column, and patients who do receive cardiac catheterization. This is the last column. And we see here that patients who do receive cardiac catheterization tend to be younger than those who do not receive cardiac catheterization. We also see that they tend to be healthier. They tend to be less likely to have these comorbid diseases that are listed. So we see here that patients who receive cardiac catheterization may actually have lower mortality rates to begin with because they're both younger and healthier. Now, when we take this, these observable differences into account, we find that we estimate a smaller mortality effect. Here we see that the effect on mortality is reduced by 20%. So here we have evidence of selection bias. We know that patients who receive treatment are different from those who don't receive treatment, probably or likely in ways that affect mortality. And if we don't account for this selection, our estimates of the treatment effect will be biased. Now, I should mention that if the two groups of patients, those who do and who do not receive cardiac catheterization, differ only in the observed demographic and comorbidity dimensions that were just listed and that the authors control for in the second row, we can just explicitly control for them using multiple linear regression. But the concern is that these patients also differ in unobserved ways, say in their appropriateness for treatment or maybe their ability to recover from treatment, in ways that we do not observe and cannot control for. And the fact that patients differ in observable dimensions leads us to believe that they may also differ in unobserved dimensions. So here we have a problem if we just use a multiple linear regression. But the authors have an idea. And it's that patients who live closer to hospitals that have the capacity to perform more intensive treatments are more likely to receive those treatments. So here we believe that distance is relevant. And we believe that to be the case because when a patient is having a heart attack, they're generally taken to the nearest hospital. And if that hospital happens to be a high-intensity hospital, then they'll be more likely to receive one of these treatments. The second thing is that the distance a patient, the distance a patient lives from a given hospital should be independent of his health status. So distance should be exogenous. Now, if these two things are the case, then we can use differential distance to catheterization and revascularization hospitals as an instrument for intensive heart attack treatment. Now, to explore whether we can do this, the authors look into a few things. Now, in this table, the authors compare characteristics of patients who live closer, so this is the column on the left, and farther, this is the column on the right, from catheterization or revascularization hospitals. Now, what do these results suggest? So first, when we compare patients who live closer versus farther from cardiac catheterization and revascularization hospitals, we find that they are similar in their observed health characteristics. So this suggests the fact that they are similar in observed health dimensions suggests that they may also be similar in unobserved health dimensions. If that's the case, then distance is exogenous. We also see here that patients who live closer to these higher intensity hospitals are more likely to receive cardiac catheterization. And we see that in the third and fourth rows in the second panel. However, if we look at the last two rows, we see that patients who live closer to these hospitals are not that much more likely to receive angioplasty, PCCA, or CABG. But it is the case that patients who live closer to these hospitals are more likely to receive cardiac catheterization. So here, distance is relevant, and it's relevant for treatment with cardiac catheterization. Because of these two things, because we believe distance is exogenous and relevant, the authors will use distance as an instrument for cardiac catheterization. Now, using instrumental variables regression to account for unobserved heterogeneity or differences in patients who do and do not receive treatment, the authors find that cardiac catheterization reduces mortality by 5 percentage points at 1 year. Now, how does this estimate compare to the ones we saw earlier? This estimate is actually much smaller. They're much smaller than the estimates that do not take into account selection. The fact that patients who received these treatments were probably more healthy to begin with. So we see that receiving cardiac catheterization within 90 days of a heart attack reduces mortality by 5 percentage points at 1 to 4 years. There are a few important points to note. First is that the validity of these results hinge on the validity of the instrument. We must believe that the instrument is both exogenous and relevant in order for these for this estimate or these estimates to be unbiased. The second is that instrumental variables estimates the local average treatment effect. This is the estimate of the marginal effect of catheterization. This is the effect for patients who would not have otherwise received treatment if they had lived relatively far from a catheterization or revascularization hospital. So these are patients for whom distance matters. This actually does not tell us about the effect of cardiac catheterization on the entire population. Or the population most appropriate for treatment. This just tells us about the effect of cardiac catheterization on patients for whom distance matters. I should also note that this estimate will be an upper bound on the effect of treatment if cardiac catheterization or revascularization hospitals offer better care offer better care in ways other than intensive procedures. For example, they have more beds, more specialists, a better ICU, then we would expect mortality to be lower at those hospitals. That said, in this paper, we seem to have found a great instrument for intensive treatment for heart attacks, for cardiac catheterization, that deals with the problem of endogeneity. Now, does this mean that distance is always a good instrument for treatment? So we'll look at two examples to see whether or not that's the case. The first example, let's say we're interested in estimating the effect of primary care on health outcomes. And let's say we want to do this within the VA. So we can look at veterans in the VA and compare outcomes for veterans who do and do not use primary care. Now, what is the endogeneity problem? It's that patients usually see a doctor when they're sick. You usually only go see a doctor when there is a reason to see a doctor. Now, can we use distance to the nearest primary care clinic as an instrument for primary care use? Well, the first question is distance relevant? Does distance predict primary care use? It is the case that patients who live closer to primary care clinics are more likely to see a primary care provider, then yes, distance is relevant. Now, the second question is distance exogenous? Is the distance you live from a primary care clinic uncorrelated with your health status? Well, it's possible, actually, that patients move depending on their healthcare needs. It's possible that patients who might need to see a doctor often, who might be very sick and need a lot of medical attention, they might actually move. It's possible that they move to live closer to a healthcare facility. If that is the case, if patients who need more healthcare actually move to live closer to healthcare facilities, then distance is not exogenous. And in this case, because distance is not exogenous, distance cannot be used as an instrument for primary care use. Let's consider another example. Let's say we're interested in the effect of emergency department, ED, services for car accident injuries on mortality. So here we can look at all passengers in car accidents and compare mortality rates for those who do and do not go to the ED. We have endogeneity here because only seriously injured passengers are taken to the ED. So to start off with, passengers who are taken to ED probably have higher mortality rates than those who do not go to the ED. Now, can we use distance to the nearest ED as an instrument for treatment in an ED? So first, is distance relevant? Does distance from an ED predict ED use? Now, if all people who need medical care are taken to the ED and people who do not need medical care are not taken to the ED, regardless of distance, then distance is not relevant. Is distance exogenous? Is distance to the nearest ED uncorrelated with accident severity? I think one could argue that distance to the nearest ED is probably uncorrelated with accident severity. So in that case, distance would be exogenous. But because it is not relevant, we cannot use distance as an instrument for emergency department use. We see here that I told stories. I tried to understand the context that we were considering, and I told a story for whether or not I believed the instrument was relevant and exogenous. Whether or not something is a good instrument completely depends on the context and judgment on whether or not it is relevant and exogenous. So here, contextual knowledge is very important and necessary. We must be able to tell a story for why we believe an instrument is relevant or exogenous.
Christine, there's a question about the primary care example that you have at the top of this slide. So if you compare the characteristics of patients who live close to a primary care provider to the characteristics of patients who live far from a primary care provider and you found no difference between these two groups, would you then feel comfortable in using distance as the instrumental variable?
So I guess the point is that we could look at observable characteristics of patients who live close and far from primary care facilities. And if we don't find any observable differences, then that might make us feel better. But again, that is not a kind of surefire way to determine whether an instrument is exogenous. Again, you would have to be able to tell a story. And I can tell many stories of patients moving to live closer to healthcare facilities when they need more healthcare. For example, patients who are on dialysis may require frequent dialysis, may actually relocate to be closer to facilities if they need to be going there all the time. So again, here what really matters is the context and the story that you're able to tell, and it needs to be convincing.
So in that story, if people did closer to the primary care facility because they're sicker, then there should be a difference in the observed health status between the folks who live close and far from the primary care physician, correct?
Yes, that is the case. Right. But we would have to think about, other ways maybe patients might differ.
Okay, so maybe we were interested in looking at, we thought that there was an unobserved variable. So say, for example, ability to drive to see a physician, which was not in the data set, and that differed amongst our patients who live close and far. Then even if we found no difference in the observed characteristics, if we thought there might be a difference in the unobserved characteristics that were not included in our data set, we would not be able to use distance as the instrument.
Yes, and Misha, you bring up a really good point. The concern is usually with factors that are unobserved, because with those we can't test whether they're different. They differ across groups. And with unobserved factors, there the story and the context really matter because we're not able to actually test for differences there. Okay. I had a few examples, but I'll talk about just one for the sake of time, so we have enough time for questions. But I listed a few examples of instrumental variables, and one example actually comes from the VA, and it's on a project that Donna Zolman and I and other co-authors have been working on. And the context for this is that right now there is a lot of interest in the healthcare system in general and in the VA on reducing healthcare costs of the highest cost patients. We know that the highest cost patients, the top 5% highest cost patients, usually account for 50% of all healthcare spending. And so healthcare systems are very interested in developing and testing innovations to better manage care for these patients and to reduce their healthcare costs. And the VA is doing the same. In Palo Alto, there was actually a pilot to test an intensive management primary care program and its effects on VA healthcare costs for Palo Alto's highest cost patients. Now, the challenge when evaluating almost any program is that program participation is voluntary. Patients choose to participate or not participate. And whether they participate or do not participate is often correlated with other factors that affect their healthcare costs and utilization. And so here we can't just compare outcomes for patients who choose to participate with outcomes for patients who choose not to participate. But here we had a very unique context where, because this was a pilot project, patients were randomized to enroll in the program or to remain in usual care, to receive the standard primary care in PAC teams. And what we did here was we used randomization to treatment, or random assignment to treatment, as an instrument for whether or not a patient participated in this program. And this is actually very similar to the example earlier that we discussed with the coin flip. We have an instrument that affects whether or not someone receives treatment. But this instrument, random assignment, should not affect someone's outcomes, should not affect their health care costs. I've listed two other examples which folks can reference for other examples of instrumental variables regression. So the third example, Doyle, the Doyle paper, which looks at the effect of foster care and long and short-term outcomes for children, actually has a really nice background and motivation for instrumental variables regression. But before we wrap up, I'd like to make a few comments about invalid instruments. So first I'll discuss instruments that fail to satisfy instrument relevance. So these are weak instruments. Instruments that explain little variation in X are weak. And instrumental variables regression with weak instruments provide unreliable estimates. The rule of thumb to check for weak instruments when there is only one endogenous regressor is from the first stage regression of two-stage least squares, compute the F statistic, testing the hypothesis that the coefficients on the instruments are all equal to zero. So here we want to test if the F, the instruments affect X, if they explain variation in X. And an F statistic greater than 10 indicates that instruments are not weak. Again, I want to emphasize that this is a rule of thumb, and because you have a F-statistic greater than 10 does not ensure that you do not have weak instruments, we still need a convincing argument that the instrument is relevant or strong. The second thing I want to briefly talk about is endogenous instruments. So instruments that are correlated with the error term, these are all other factors that affect the outcome variable, are endogenous, and they fail to satisfy instrument exogeneity. Instrumental variables regression with endogenous instruments provide unreliable estimates. The whole point of instrumental variables regression is to isolate and utilize exogenous variation in X to estimate beta 1. Now, if our instrument Z is endogenous, then we will not be able to do this. When there are more instruments than there are endogenous regressors, it's possible to test over-identifying restrictions with a J statistic. I'll just leave that there. For anyone who's interested, you can look into it more. But again, here, we need a convincing argument that the instruments are exogenous. And oftentimes here, we can't actually, it's hard to test. So we need to be able to tell a compelling story. And we need to be able to do this when thinking about both instrument relevance and instrument exogeneity. And I'll wrap up now with just a few comments about instrumental variables regression before opening up the floor for questions. The first comment is that instrumental variables regression is a very powerful tool to estimate causal effects. The conditions for a valid instrument are relevance. So the instrument must affect treatment or the explanatory variable we're interested in. And the instrument must be exogenous. The instrument must be uncorrelated with all other factors that may affect the outcomes that we're interested in. Good instruments are actually very difficult to find. Using an invalid, so weak or endogenous instrument, will give us meaningless results. There are some tests available to check for instrument validity, but what is absolutely necessary is a good story for why we believe the instrument is relevant and exogenous. And with that, Risha, I think we have quite a bit of time for questions now.
Great. Thank you, Christine. We do have a few questions. The first one is whether the choice of the instrument is made a priori or after looking at your data.
I would say that both are important, but generally the story comes first. You have an idea, an insight about something that is relevant and exogenous, and then you can go into the data to check. You can test instrument relevance. You can see if the instrument affects or explains variation in the explanatory variable you're interested in. And then for exogeneity, there are some tests, as I mentioned before, there are some things you can check, but there you really need the story.
So it seems to me that if we were simply just compiling a data set and then we went through variables one by one and evaluated their F statistic, that that's sort of the equivalent to data mining. And that it seems as though it's really just best practice and cleanest to think through what your instrument might be, and then after you have your data, test the relevance of that instrument or the strength of that instrument.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do not think it's a good idea to just work through the data and calculate F statistics to see what has the largest F statistic. I don't think that's a good way to find instruments.
Another question is whether you can provide another example to illustrate the difference or the interpretation between the local average treatment effect and the average treatment effect.
Yes. So let's. I had mentioned the example in the VA where we evaluated the effect of intensive management primary care on VA healthcare costs. So I had provided just a very brief description of that, but I'll provide a little bit more detail. So what happened there was the facility wanted to test this evaluation, and they wanted to do a very rigorous evaluation. So they decided to randomize patients to be eligible to enroll in the program and then and to receive usual care. So there were many patients who were offered the program. So they were offered the option to enroll and participate in the program. Not everyone who was offered that option actually chose to enroll. So even within our treatment group, we had people who received treatment and did not receive treatment. So there we can compute two different effects or think about two different effects of the program. So the average treatment effect would be the average effect of the program on the entire treatment group. And these include patients who participated in the program and who did not. This is the average effect that we would expect if we were to just offer this program somewhere else. If a new facility were to adopt this program and offer it to all patients, this is the average effect that we would expect to observe. Now, when we use instrumental variables regression, we use randomization as an instrument for participation. So what we do there is we estimated the effect of the program for patients who actually participated in the program. So here the instrument affected whether or not someone participated. And so there we were estimating the effect just for those patients. So in that case, the average treatment effect and the local average treatment effect is different because they are looking at two different groups.
Great. Thank you, Christine. There are a couple of questions about instrumental variables versus propensity scores. Can you give us a couple of sentences about the difference between each and when you would use one versus the other?
Todd Wagner gave a lecture on propensity scores a few weeks ago, and so he went into much greater detail. And for anyone who's interested, I think those slides in the lecture are available. But in general, what we do in when we use propensity scores, what we're doing there is we're trying to control for a person's propensity to receive treatment. We believe that patients who receive treatment or who don't receive treatment differ. And so we can try to control for differences, the differences in propensity to receive treatment. I should mention that in calculating propensity scores, we only use observable characteristics. We can only use data we have in order to calculate a propensity score. So when we use propensity scores, we are only controlling for observable characteristics, which is actually quite similar to the second row in the heart attack treatment paper, where the authors controlled for observable demographic and comorbidity measures. The powerful thing about instrumental variables regression is that when we have an exogenous instrument, we are able to account for unobserved differences. So that is, I think, the key difference. That with instrumental variables regression, if we do have a valid instrument, we are able to control for unobserved differences. Whereas with propensity scores or multiple linear regression, we are only able to control for observable differences.
Great. That's a hugely important distinction. And so the IV approach would be then stronger with respect to causal inference than the propensity score approach.
Yes. I wanted to also mention, I listed a few resources and references at the end of the presentation. So there are references to each of the papers I cited. And I also included a chapter from the Salk and Watson Introduction to Econometrics textbook, which I think offers a great introduction and overview of instrumental variables regression for anyone interested in looking into that more.
Wonderful. We have a sort of 30,000-foot question, and that is, how do you even decide whether your study warrants using an instrumental variable approach?
So I think the question there is, do we believe that that our research design or the methodology we propose suffers from endogeneity? So I would actually take it up even, 10,000 more feet. So the question is, are we concerned that our estimates are biased? Is there endogeneity? Are there omitted variables? Is there sample selection? Is there simultaneous causality? Are there reasons why our estimate from our simple comparison or from our linear regression would be biased? And if they are biased, then we need to think about other alternatives, other methods that would will help us overcome the bias from endogeneity. And here, instrumental variables regression is just one option. And it would only be relevant if you had a valid instrument in mind. I should mention there are many other options, but instrumental variables regression is just one. And it is relevant if we believe that there is endogeneity, if the variable of interest we're interested in is endogenous and we have a valid instrument.
Right. So it sounds like the instrumental variable approach can oftentimes be used when looking at observational data in which selection bias may be a big factor in receipt of treatment, but that it may also be of use in randomized studies where, such as your and Dr. Zolman's IMPACT study, where the people are randomized to an intervention, but they may uptake the intervention in systematically different ways.
Yes, and we actually found that was true in our case. Patients who chose to participate in the program did look different, at least in their observable characteristics, than patients who did not participate in the program. So we would not have been able to just compare outcomes for patients who chose to participate with outcomes of those who chose not to participate. And there, the randomization was very powerful because we had an instrument, a valid instrument for program participation.
So in this situation, then, using randomization to intervention as the instrument is akin to analyzing a randomized control trial with an intent to treat analysis. Is that correct?
No. So the intent to treat analysis would be estimating the average treatment effect. We would be estimating the treatment effect among all patients who are randomized to treatment. So we intended to treat all of these patients. So that is the intent to treat effect, and that is the average treatment effect. The instrumental variables estimate gives us the local average treatment effect. So this is the treatment on the treated. This is the treatment effect on those who did receive treatment.
Great, thank you. A really important distinction. Okay, a couple of other questions. Do you recommend looking at the standardized residuals and covariates to evaluate the strength of the instrument?
Can you repeat that, Risha?
The standardized residuals in covariates to look for the strength of the instrument. So I'm not sure that I understand the in covariates component, but do you look at the, let's say, do you look at the residuals to understand the strength of the instrument?
You know, it's sufficient there in the first stage regression. We can look at the coefficients on the instrument. We can see if the instruments have a large effect on the endogenous variable we're interested in. And there we can also calculate the F statistic. So can we reject that these instruments have no effect, that the coefficients on these instruments are all zero?
Okay, great. We do have a couple of other questions, but we are now past the top of the hour. It's 12:01. So I'm hoping, Christine, we can pass these questions on to you, and perhaps you can answer them at your leisure, given that we're out of time for our seminar today.
Okay, sure.
Great. Thank you so much, Christine. This was a fantastic lecture. Heidi, are you still on the line?
I am still here, yes.
Great. I think, do we have a poll available for folks after this seminar?
Yes. I'm going to close the meeting out in just a moment here, and everyone will be prompted with a feedback survey. You could take a few moments to fill that out. We really do read through all of your feedback. We would very much appreciate you taking the time to do that.
Thank you. Thank you to our audience, and great thanks to our presenter, Dr. Chi.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.